In 1957, you completed the first commissioned portrait of Thomas Gilcrease.
Yes.
Tell us about that. Was that from life?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I wouldn't do anybody that wouldn't pose for me.
How long did it take for you to paint Thomas Gilcrease?
I have no idea, really. I was a good friend of Tom's. I did a lot of things artistically for him in his museum. I wanted to do Tom, and he was rather egotistic. I mean, I don't blame him. If I had all those billions, I would too. But anyway, I would make drawings of him, and he would pose for me. I remember one time he had the most wonderful look on his face. A.C. Blue Eagle, the Indian, was just back from living with a bunch of Cherokee women, and Mr. Gilcrease just thought that was wonderful, and he smiled all the way through the story. Yeah, we were good friends. I can tell you all kinds of stories about Mr. Gilcrease.
Did he enjoy your sense of humor? Could you laugh together?
Mostly he liked me because I was a good listener, and he would have me to dinner quite often, or take me out to dinner, because I would listen to some of his stories. And one of the best stories I remember was when they were wanting to check on how much money he had in the bank. The bank was. So he said, well, I want to know how much you got. And so they came out and told him how much money they had. So he just bought the bank and fired the head of the bank. That's the God's truth. But I really loved that old man.
And it was in Tulsa then?
Tulsa, yeah.
You remember where you went to eat, restaurants or anything like that?
No, we ate either at his home or the hotel. He always liked to take me because he loved to talk.
And what was his main interest when he talked? Was it collecting art?
No, his main interest was him. His main interest was him, yeah.
But you still found him fascinating.
Oh, yeah, I loved his stories. I love people that tell stories.
He died in 1962, mm-hmm. So that must have been a loss to you because you'd become his friend.
Yeah, well, not really. He wanted to buy me one time and build me a house, and I would live there by his museum, and he could have people when they come, he'd say, well, that artist just lives right over here. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I got up and left. And I told my wife, I said, wasn't that embarrassing to you for me to get up and leave? She said, no, I thought you'd leave before that.
So he wanted to own you.
He wanted to own me, that's right.
The man who said no to Thomas Gilcrease is right here.
Well, there were two others there, too. An Indian boy and Woody Crumble. They didn't get up and left. He just said no. It didn't work, and he wanted to own us all.
And he said once, a man must leave a track of some sort, and it might as well be a good one.
Oh, I admired him tremendously. He was witty, too. I could tell you all kinds of stories about him.
And he was kind of lucky. He had land allocated to him south of Glenpool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Became wealthy at a very young age. He was a teenager when he actually started making his money.
Well, he had club foot, and he had to have that operated on. But I'll tell you one thing real quick. I remember one time he told me that his father drank a lot. So one time he said his father left him in charge of the bales of cotton, which is what he did as a kid, and his dad. And he said while he was gone, the wind blew the cotton into the water. And when his father came back, he was drunk, and he thought his son had put the cotton in the water. And he said, just whip the hell out of me. That's the kind of story he would tell.